7842. My name is Sam. Joining me this week is Becky. How are you?
I'm doing great, Sam.
And Dan, how are you?
Better than average.
Fantastic. I have had a fun week doing a lot of work here in the studio, but I also discovered Kerbal Space Program, which a lot of people who listen to the show have told me that I should really pay attention to. It's really weird. It's like a sandbox game, and then you build rockets and shoot them into space with actual, like, something very close to orbital mechanics and stuff like that. And Becky's been watching me completely fail to get into orbit time after time after time again. And I'm like, oh, maybe if I strap more boosters to it. Then I go, wait, no, that doesn't work.
Yep. We've seen a few ocean crashes. We've seen a few escape orbit and end up in somewhere approaching the Oort cloud.
Yeah. And you've had you had a weird week this week. Didn't you get trapped somewhere up on Mount Rainier?
Actually, on Monday. We took a nice hike up to High Rock Point, which is a crazy cool place to, or High Rock Lookout, actually, which is an incredible place to hike up to. Beautiful view. You're at 5,600 feet. You can see Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens, and Mount Adams. And it's a really a stair climb hike. It is steep all the way up. And when we got back down, the battery in the truck had died.
Oh!
So we had to wait 4.5 hours for a tow truck to come out and give us a jump. And so it was well after dark, and there was a storm incoming, and we beat the storm off the mountain by about 5 minutes. So,
well, hey, you got away out of the storm, you got off the mountain, and I mean, you were in a known location, which helps. It's not like
Actually, the known location was a tricky one. That we were 9 miles in on forest roads,
right?
And so the tow truck driver didn't know how to get in at first, and needed three-part assistance from Google Maps and the Forest Service and my wife.
Oh, geez.
And before we got back in the truck, you know, just as we'd gotten the truck started and we're hopping in, the tow truck driver says, "Hey, guys, wait. Don't leave me here. I don't know how to get out." So you followed us all the way out.
So needless to say, you weren't praying for a safe recovery.
Oh.
No. Actually, we were prepared to sleep in the car and walk out the next day if necessary.
But. Yeah, you know, that'll happen. I mean, Mount Rainier, I moved up here, God, 5, 6, 7 years ago now, and nobody told me that Mount Rainier was a volcano.
Oh, yeah. A big one.
Yeah, it's kind of a large one, kind of a scary one. Isn't it on the decade list?
I'm not really sure, but it's one of those that it's like, they're kind of like, it could go at any day, and when it does, it'll destroy half
of us. Top 10 mountains most likely to kill you list.
Yeah.
It's like it's the who's who book for volcanoes.
Could be another 1,000 years, could be 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. So I figured we should start on a high note. Well, sort of a high note. So Barry Hazel Jr. has been awarded nearly $2 million by a California court for a First Amendment rights violation. After being released from prison in 2007, Hazel was ordered to attend a drug treatment program as part of his parole. He objected that the religiously based program demanded that he submit to a higher power. When Hazel asked to be transferred to a secular recovery program, he was sent back to jail for over 100 days for a parole violation. California and the remainder he got $1 million from the state of California and another $1 million from the contractor that did the drug treatment program. We get that a lot. Not arrested people. oddly enough, statistically, people without religion aren't in prison. There used to be a number on that. But people call us a lot asking us about things like a secular AAA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, not a secular AAA. That'd be a completely different thing.
That's for rescuing you off the mountain.
Yeah.
Right. As a matter of fact.
I think by definition, that's kind of secular, isn't it? There's
no religious affiliation with American Automobile Association that I'm aware of, but there's no overt religious affiliation in terms of a denomination with things like Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, but it is religiously based and motivated in that it requires that you submit to a higher power. And there's no way to do that if you do not have a higher power. So when the state compels you to do something, they're compelling you to participate in a program that has a spiritual religious foundation.
Yeah, and I know people who've been through drug treatment programs where they say, you must submit to a higher power, you must submit to a higher power. And they go, I'm an atheist, I don't. And they go, no, submit, submit. And it's weird.
that actually happened to a friend of mine that I used to work with on the boats. And his response to that was, you know, they said, well, you can have any higher power. Just say it's the universe or just something, some higher power greater than you. And he said, all right, it's this pen. And for the rest of treatment, this pen was his higher power.
Now, someone close to me had experienced a similar thing and went home and said, all right, yin yang symbol, I need more balance in my life. This is, you know, something that is, you know, historically and culturally significant to a lot of people. I will use that symbol as my higher power. And he went back and he said, great, this is my higher power. It's the yin yang symbol. And they said, no, that's not a higher power. Go back and pick a new one.
Yeah.
So it can be really difficult for someone who is agnostic or atheist.
Maybe it doesn't have a religious affiliation, but I'd say it has an affiliation with religion. I mean,
yes.
The entire, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous movement required, you know, belief in a religion in order to be a member of it. It's always been a part of it. And, you know, atheists get alcoholism too, and it'd be nice if they had somewhere to go where they didn't have to change, where they didn't have to believe in something that ain't true in order to do it.
And there are programs, and there are treatment sort of you know, lines that, including rational recovery. That's one that's popularly used by agnostics and atheists. But in this case, the only way that he could have, you know, his parole was to participate in a religiously affiliated one. Not cool.
Right. Yeah, but he got money for it, which the good thing here is case law, you know, that's not a thing you can do now, according to this court. And that's a good start, I think. So we do have a correction this week. David Williamson from Central Florida Freethought writes, hi, folks. As I was listening to your first Back on the Air episode, congrats, by the way, I heard you mention twice that the Greece decision applies to school boards. This is not the case, according to all legal sources I work with in the movement, including the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Part of the confusion comes from David Suhor's efforts to stop invocations in the Escambia County, Florida school board meetings, whereas the Greece decision deals with municipal governing bodies like city councils. I've spoken with David Suhor about this and commend him for all his efforts. Thank you for that correction. I believe that was me. Did I make that mistake?
I think maybe some of us did.
Okay, yeah.
The Greece decision, this is Greece versus Galloway, said, yes, it is appropriate and permissible and legal to offer religious invocations before something like a city council meeting.
Right.
Because they are part of our tradition and there's ceremonial deism that was expressed by our founders. All kinds of things like that, but you cannot have viewpoint discrimination. So you can't just say they have to be only the Protestant Episcopal, you know, denomination that's always offering prayers and invocations. And in this case, David Suhor was a paganist who said, "Hey, you offer prayers before the school board meetings? Great, let me in. I want to give my prayer."
Right. And I think that's a fine thing. I mean, I would prefer that this sort of thing not happen, but if you're going to have it, it needs to be inclusive.
Yeah, let's have some variety in there.
Yeah, let's have the first National Church of Twister and Disco come in. That would be a party, I think. That would be an interesting invocation, an interesting way to begin your big government deal.
So one of the interesting things here is that a school board meeting may differ actually from municipal board meetings, since it is you know, the rules governing how you offer religiously flavored things in schools are very different. Sometimes they can be considered compulsory, so that's why we can't have things like administrative or staff led prayers in schools. And so there's some interesting sort of legal arguments against the school boards offering prayers and invocations that differs a little bit from municipal things like our county council and city council and legislative sessions.
Yeah. Good move. Thank you very much. I mean, we want to make sure we get it right. I mean, getting the details right is kind of important to our community, and especially since we're trying to educate people, it'd be nice if we got it right. So when we make a mistake, we'd like to point it out. You know, if you ever find that we're wrong about something, go ahead and go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny candy red like button, and send a correction, and that would be fine.
That actually goes double for me in my moment of science. I've been wanting to write a moment of science about scientific retraction and how appropriate it is to criticize scientists when they're in the wrong. So if you find anything that I've said in a moment of science that was wrong, Please let me know. I've been waiting to write this piece forever.
Fantastic. One more thing. Since this is our third week back in Seattle and things are going pretty good, we're ready to call it done and call it ready to go. So you can go after the show. We're going to be at we're in Naked City Brewery at 8564 Greenwood Avenue North in Seattle. We'll be in the back room. You can order at the bar. We're looking for Seattle area listeners to the show. I'm looking forward to this. One, I really like Naked City. Two, we're back in Seattle. It's for those of you not in the know, we used to be in the very early days of the show. This is actually how we met Dan.
Yeah.
we were on cable access in Seattle. It was a very different show back then. But nice to be back in Seattle on KKNW, and I'm looking forward to meeting some Seattle listeners.
And one thing that dates all the way back from that time, about 4 years ago when we were in Seattle, is that afterwards, inviting our listeners and viewers and friends to, you know, come hang out, socialize, meet the cast and crew. It's a really important thing to be able to have an outlet for non-believers, non-religious people to meet others and make those kinds of connections.
It's one of those things that dates from, you know, it comes from the atheist experience, and it's one of the things that they've done that we've really kept, because it's a good thing to do, and it's a great way to meet people. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about crazy people.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Billy, I'm the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true.
Becky,
come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Good. Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Mark Driscoll, probably.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Yeah. Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. And this hour, this hour we're talking about crazy people. And I suppose at this point we should probably talk about the elephant in the room, which would be Mark Driscoll.
Mark Driscoll's an elephant? I thought he was a disgraced pastor.
Maybe he's a little bit of both. Pastor Mark Driscoll has officially resigned as head of Mars Hill Church. The resignation comes after the conclusion of an investigation into allegations of bullying and other unethical behavior. Though the board concluded that Driscoll has, at times, been guilty of arrogance, responding to conflict with a quick temper and harsh speech, and leading the staff and elders in a domineering manner, they did not ask for his resignation and admitted surprise when it was offered. Driscoll admitted in his letter that aspects of my personality and leadership style have proven to be divisive within the Mars Hill context.
Nice way to say, this is just a part of my leadership style.
Right, right. If you're ever looking for proof that it's a bit corporate over there at at Mars Hill, the way he left is a pretty pretty good way to look at it. I mean, he was offered, I don't know, I imagine that they weren't as surprised as they might think.
Oh, this is a complete surprise. We had no idea that you were going to take this action, Pastor Mark.
I think aspects of his personality might be divisive within Thunderdome.
And I especially like the bullying bit because, I mean, they're saying he's bullying other people. But if we remember the episodes we did about Mars Hill Church, over in September, I guess he's bullying bullies. But isn't that sort of the nature of these hierarchical power structures in a way?
I guess so. I guess so. I mean, here's the thing. Mark Driscoll, having offered his own resignation, he gets to be a martyr in this case. He gets to say, look, I took the high road. I didn't have to wait for, you guys to say that I should leave. I really reflected and looked deeply and decided that this was the best thing for my church. I mean, he gets to come out of this trying to say that and be the martyr instead of really just his elders who have been and then have been, being basically booted out one by one saying, hey, Pastor Mark is being a jerk. He's not. He's responding with a quick temper and harsh speech. That's quite the nice way of framing some of the stuff that we hear on a regular basis from ex-Mars Hill pastors and members and elders having heard from Mark Driscoll. He's got that venomous tongue that he can go after anyone who is not part of his leadership style, if you will, to use his words.
Right. Where do you think he's going to go from here? I mean, are we going to see him in another church in a couple weeks, or what do you think?
I'm kind of hoping that he takes over for Jesse Ventura on that conspiracy theory show.
How about you, Becky?
I don't know. I think he needs to have like a podcast of Saturn's Mountain or something like that.
Saturn's. Oh, very nice. Very nice. I don't know. Working at Dick's. I mean, serving hamburgers.
Okay.
I think that might be a way to go. I don't know. I don't know if I'd go there, but...
He gets to wear a t-shirt, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be nice. I expect he's going to be back at another church bullying people all over again inside of a year.
We don't see this as any kind of change. He didn't actually offer an apology.
No. No. Where's the apology? And where's Mars Hill saying that the way he led Mars Hill created a bad... structure within Mars Hill, a bad context.
Do we see anything from Mars Hill about how we're going to change and how our leadership structure and our leaders will have expectations that differ from how Mark Driscoll act?
Is there a repudiation of that big covenant document where it says you'll hand over your liver and your firstborn if you swear or if you?
Are members going to be permitted to go to secular therapy or seek any kind of counsel outside of your church? I don't know. We haven't seen that yet.
Okay, time to do something fun. We'll talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, boy.
That would be Satanists. The Satanic Temple plans to submit a holiday display to be featured at the Florida State Capitol building this December. The display, which depicts an angel falling into a pit of fire surrounded by biblical verses, was the only holiday submission denied last year. Other displays included a nativity scene, a Festivus pole made of beer cans, a flying spaghetti monster, and plaques from various atheist groups. Satanic Temple leader Lucian Greaves, which totally sounds like a Carmen Sandiego character, said they were submitting their application early this year with plenty of time to confront any objections or concerns. He added that viewpoint discrimination is intolerable.
I have a concern.
Okay.
Is the angel surrounded by biblical verses, or is the pit of fire surrounded by biblical verses? Because that would be my deciding factor about whether to host this kind of display and exhibition in the Florida State Capitol building.
So what's on fire?
This is my way of giving so many concerns and questions or objections, throwing so many their way that to create a paperwork backlog that, oh, look, it's December 26th and your display is finally approved.
I was afraid it might go. But that's also a stalling technique, is that we've received there's so many questions about this that, oh, sorry, we didn't get them all answered in time because we sat on it. Therefore, it doesn't get up.
You know, I actually kind of like the visual here of the angel falling into the pit, because I mean I think it's pretty clear that this is a depiction of, you know, Lucifer being a fallen angel or something,
right?
But
right.
You know, if you just put a Santa hat on him, he's going down the chimney.
That's true.
Please, Lucian Greaves, take my suggestion.
Since Santa is completely irreligious and secular, they should have no problem with hosting it.
Carmen Sandiego villain, Satanist, Lucian Greaves. He stole, I guess he probably stole the Vatican.
Ooh.
Which would make sense. And then you have to find him in, well, I guess hell? I don't know.
Sure, why not?
I'm putting on my red trench coat right as we speak.
Well, there's an aspect to this that I'd probably want to ask is, so this could specifically be interpreted as, and more easily interpreted because it's not one of the big three religions, as a swipe at Christianity, which Satanism kind of is. I mean, it's like I said, it's dinner theater atheism. They like dressing up and doing weird things. Should that be enough to keep it away?
I would say no. Every religion is a swipe at another religion. It is. If you say my religion is the true one, then you're saying that the other religions are the false one. I mean, you blaspheme other religions by practicing your own. I think it would be a completely weak argument. I don't say that. I think people will probably try and make that argument, but I think it's a weak argument to say that this religion is set up solely to mock, you know, something else. I mean, for Pete's sake, they let in the flying spaghetti monster, which is explicitly an organization symbolically to mock creationists. It was set up to try and make sure that creationism didn't get taught in schools.
Right, but that's a swipe at all religions, though. Where this is a swipe at a specific one, I guess. Do these things get put up when they actually qualify as potentially hate crimes in a very broad definition of the law?
I think if you're going to put up a Christian holiday display, you have to put up a Satanist holiday display, because they believe in the same stuff. I mean, it's not that Satanism is a different religion from Christianity. It's a different sect from Christianity. They have the same.
You've got the same characters,
dogma, the same characters. Yeah, Satanism is basically like Christian slash fiction.
One guys are, half, most of the people are on one guy's team, and then a small group is on the other guy's team. So really, just Satanists are rooting for the underdog. And spiritual Christians are just the fair weather fans. Is that,
once again, much like, you know, prayers in legislative sessions and stuff like that? I mean, the goal here is, I just want to see this stuff gone. I mean, what happens when these government buildings start looking like, start looking like mini golf courses? I mean, this is the question.
I will play.
Yeah, no, I totally play that. Yeah.
I actually really like the idea of seasonally decorating things, but in Florida, you don't have to decorate things with holly and red ribbons. It's not seasonal there. I mean, decorate something in Washington, D.C. with cherry blossoms in the spring. It's a seasonal decoration. It's completely non-religious, and it beautifies our capital.
So would you guys like one of... Okay, so we have some emails we should probably get into. This is one of those emails that I think is supposed to be challenging to us, but really just kind of falls flat. So I'm gonna read this question, and then we'll go from there. So the question is, this is from Graviton from the Internet, who writes, "Can I ask you, sir, what happen if you die and there is a real God and send you to hell because of not believing in him? What will you do?"
Well, I can't answer this. It wasn't addressed to me.
No.
It was addressed to Sir.
Oh, right. Of course. Well, I guess if that happens, I'll be in hell because you've now authored the entire story. I mean, in your question, there is a God. I've been judged and I'm in hell. So what am I in hell? Well, I'd be in hell. But there's a problem with that, which I think is fairly obvious. But I don't know. What would you guys do?
First off, I'm a little wary of the question. I mean, Graviton's an interesting name, and
yeah.
It sort of suggests that maybe this is a Decepticon. It's pretty clear that English was not the first language here, and I'm going to guess the first language is actually Cybertronian, in which case my response to this question is, Autobots, let's roll.
If I die, and there is a real God, and I'm in hell, and I'm there because of not believing in that real God, there's a lot of ifs there.
Is this a Pascal's Wager thing? Is what we're looking at here Pascal's Wager?
I don't actually think Graviton is suggesting that we try and believe in God to avoid hellfire. I think he's just saying, ha ha, you're going to burn in hell because there's a real God, and when you die, you're going to go there.
Right. But I have a feeling that he is, though. I mean, honestly. Because that is, well, what happens if you die and then you go to hell? Is this a Pascal's Wager?
And Pascal's Wager being, hey, you're better off believing in God.
Oh, yeah, there's that aspect to it too, which I suppose we're not addressing.
You're better off believing in God because if it comes true, that's what happens.
Well, I have a question for you, Graviton. What will you do if it rains narwhals?
Oh, well, get underground.
Ah, yeah. Now we're on the same page.
Have a leaden umbrella.
Narwhals are kind of heavy, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A really reinforced leaden umbrella.
We have another email. This is Will from Northern Ireland, who writes, "Just wanted to offer support to Patricia. There's nothing tougher or braver than her supporting her father's wishes, especially when I'm sure inside she wanted to do everything to save him. I hope she gets the support network she needs to help her cope with her family and build herself a life where she can be open and comfortable about her own beliefs." Last week's episode was a heck of an episode. I mean, really, it's a very different take on things.
Yeah, we had a conversation with Patricia, who is a former Jehovah's Witness, and the thing that Will is referring to here is, in supporting her father's wishes, was her father was perishing due to a blood disorder, and he would not accept blood products that may have prolonged his life.
Yeah.
So someone who does not believe in that Jehovah's Witness prohibition against blood products, to be able to honor her father's wishes, that really is tough. It's brave. And I think that we're all on the same page here, that we really hope that anyone who's in that kind of position does get the support network that they need to cope with loss, to cope with loss of a loved one, to cope with the loss of a community that is now, you know, ready to shun you for going against their doctrine, their beliefs.
Yeah. If you haven't heard last week's episode, you should really go back and take a listen to it. It was the first time I think we've really talked about Jehovah's Witnesses directly. I know Patricia will really, really be happy to hear this. It was, if I may speak on her behalf, it really, at the end of it, she seemed a lot more comfortable with herself than before.
Clearly, yeah.
It seemed like a real, real catharsis. And we have a third email. This comes to us from Kai from the Internet, who writes, "Hi, I have one question that I'm struggling with. My girlfriend is very religious. I'm atheist, but I truly love her. So should I fake being religious? I know I have to give up on her, but she is the only one that I truly love, and I feel that she's like she's my soulmate. Could you please give me some advice?" This is kind of a heavy one. We haven't gotten one quite like this one before, so I think maybe we should go down the line. Go ahead, Dan.
I'm going to say you need to build a relationship based on honesty. You don't have to be opposed to her being religious, but you should be honest about what you are. Otherwise, when it comes out later, it's going to be one of those things where it's like, well, what else did he lie about?
Yeah, that's true.
I think, you know, it's apparent here that you're really struggling because you say, I know I have to give up on her. I don't know that you necessarily do. I see that you're being drawn that way. And I wouldn't necessarily prolong the giving up on her just because you really feel so attached, like she's your soulmate. The other thing I wonder about is the use of the word soulmate. You know, oftentimes when people have beliefs that there is one person destined to be their partner for all life, those kinds of ideas come from oftentimes religious backgrounds.
Yeah.
And there are definitely atheists who feel that there is one true right person for them. But atheists who don't necessarily believe in a predestined universe, in a higher power, in any kind of creator, might look a little bit more closely to say, What is this idea that I'm assuming that there is only one right person for me?
Right.
But again, I will agree with Dan. If you feel that this is a person that you want to be long term with, that you want to spend your life with, or a good portion of your life with, you got to be honest about it. And you can also say, you know what, if my being an atheist isn't right for you, then give her the freedom to be able to say, maybe you're not the right person for me.
So I was on an episode of Living After Faith about 3 years ago now. And one of the things I don't really talk about on the show much is that I've, like a lot of Americans, I've been married before, before I proposed to Becky on the air. One of the problems, marriages almost always fall apart for more than one reason, but one of the biggest reasons ours ended was because of religious differences. I used to be into the New Age movement. When I met my first wife, I still was, and my transition out of the New Age movement happened while we were, culminated really while we were married. And instead of talking about it, we kind of kept it from each other. And it left a lot of unresolved stressors because my first wife was also a scientist. You know, she was also in science. And so she understood the scientific method and testing and skepticism possibly better than I do. And she was really uncomfortable with having that applied to her spiritual beliefs. And it became a source of contention. And because it was never talked about, it ended up being one of the major underpinnings tearing our relationship apart. And so my answer is very similar to Dan's. I think leaving stuff like these, because people tend to think for me, at the time when I became an atheist, like atheism was, or when I finally admitted my atheism, by being more honest, it was like, it wasn't a big deal, and my whole point was I'm not gonna be evangelical about it. I'm not gonna evangelize and tell everybody else to become an atheist. I'd say that's changed somewhat, but really, really, what I'm evangelizing is that atheists are human beings, and this is part of the reason why. Her spiritual beliefs were closely held, and she couldn't handle somebody that close to her who thought that she might. Who thought that she worshipped the flying spaghetti monster, which was just getting started at the time. So I'd say, yeah, don't fake it. Don't fake it for you. It's going to drain you. It's going to drain you. And specifically, don't hide it. I don't think you should hide what you are, because I think it'll tear things apart and make things worse than they were before you started. I mean, a bit of a long story on my part, but
there are those, though, who will be honest about their lack of belief, but for the purpose of a partner, and maybe with raising children, will say, all right, well, I don't believe in this God, so it doesn't matter to me if I, take the communion, or, it would matter certainly to the people in that particular community.
Right.
But they'll say, yeah, okay, I'll light the candles, I'll sing the songs, it doesn't matter, I don't feel bad about it, and it's meaningful to my partner. But, and as long as we're on the same page about that, then many people will have a healthy and dynamic relationship that includes that.
I would call that a personal preference. Because for me, having to fake through a ritual would be kind of annoying. Ritual has never been a big part of my life. I mean, even when I was in the New Age movement, ritual was a big deal. It was like, I don't like this part. That's different from what you believe. I mean, you know, and is the person that he's in love with going to be okay with somebody just going through the motions? So the only solution to this, I think, is talking through it.
You know, I actually know lots of people who have been in relationships, even long-term relationships or successful marriages, that one was a believer and one was not. And it's just sort of something that, you know, they didn't really talk about after the fact of saying, oh, well, I'm a believer and I'm not. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how much more complicated that gets if you decide you're going to have kids, but it certainly could.
Sure. So we have some people to thank this week.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we should thank Richard from Kent, UK. Once again, Richard from Kent Actual. And Rick from Elma again. And we should apologize because he actually contributed to Peggy's Challenge last week and we didn't mention him on the air. Peggy's Challenge, of course, is Peggy from Kent's Challenge, from Kent here, challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the show on the air. And if you'd like to participate, you can go to askanatheist.tv. You can click on the yellow shiny button on the right hand side, not the red button where you issue corrections or complain to us, but the other button, which will take you direct to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly to show production.
That's sort of the opposite of the complaints.
No, because we get some good emails too. I mean, you know, well, actually, sometimes when people meet, you know, when people do the Peggy's Challenge thing, we do get notes from them too. And so, yeah, I guess that is the opposite of a correction. But I wouldn't mind people who contributed to Peggy's Challenge. Actually, I'd really like it if people would contribute to Peggy's Challenge and
correct us.
And correct us on something when we're wrong. I mean, that would be great. That's so atheism right there in a way, I suppose. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have a moment of science.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah, worried yet? With stdhometestkit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with stdhometestkit.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
Peggy used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up. And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer. And now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. And now, a moment of science with Dan Lombardo.
Thanks, Sam. Today's moment of science is about cognitive biases, or mental processes that keep us from thinking clearly and rationally in light of evidence to the contrary. There are actually dozens of recognized cognitive biases, but for the sake of time, I'm just going to talk about a few today and hope to continue with more of them later. One cognitive bias that I'm sure we've all witnessed is called the backfire effect. This occurs when a person's beliefs actually become strengthened in the light of opposing evidence. A good example of this might be reactions to the fossil record of evolution and geological evidence of deep time. Some believers will claim that this overwhelming scientific evidence only proves that their faith is being tested by a powerful God who wishes them to believe in creationism and a young earth, rather than accepting the evidence for what it really is, facts. We also see this kind of thinking in response to global climate change. The idea that the vast majority of scientists agree that climate change is occurring and that it is caused by humans only proves to the denier that the scientists are part of a conspiracy and must then be both incorrect and harboring sinister ulterior motives. Because how else could they have possibly produced so much evidence? The reality in both cases is that evolution occurs, the universe is older than ancient peoples believed, and that humans have indeed had a negative effect on our environment, and that we're now beginning to suffer the ramifications. But of course, the more that the evidence piles up, the stronger the denial becomes. Strange, yes? Another interesting and frequently related type of cognitive bias is called reactance. In reactance, a person or group of people resists what is asked or expected of them merely because it is being asked or expected of them. Even if what is being asked is a prudent measure to protect oneself, it will be resisted because it appears to restrict personal freedom of choice. An excellent example of this is opposition to public safety measures such as helmet, seatbelt, and drunk driving laws, not to mention opposition to public school policies requiring that students be vaccinated. Similarly, reactive devaluation occurs when one opposes mandates or suggestions that come from a perceived adversary. This is a major problem for environmentalists in political struggles, since they're often written off as liberals, tree huggers, or hippies, which many politicians or corporate entities see as their enemies. As a result, legal regulations on pollution and habitat destruction, even at the known cost of our future, have been and continue to be fought tooth and nail. A third bias that we're probably all familiar with is resistance to change. For most of us, change is scary, and changing the way we live our daily lives is something we simply don't want to do, even if we know it's causing our problems. This bias is called the status quo bias, and essentially it tells us to keep tomorrow pretty much the same as today and yesterday. When we suggest that the way things are is the way they've always been and that's good enough, we're falling victim to the status quo bias. This is a major issue for those in human rights struggles, since extending rights to different groups of peoples changes the status quo. For the last several hundred years in this country, white straight men have had more rights and more political power than any other demographic. As campaigns for human equality proceed and other demographics begin to share some of those rights and powers, we see a growing body of resistance from those who want to keep things the way they were. Examples of this include traditional marriage movements and segregationists of many different kinds. But as we can plainly see from recent evidence and modern ethics, we've been wrong in the past, and the way it was is not the way it should be. In the words of Dr. Horrible, the status is not quo. Changing our ways is scary and might even be expensive, but it's necessary if we're going to be sticking around on this planet without killing ourselves and each other.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Dan.
So one of the things that looks really interesting or that has come out about that cognitive bias, Dan, that you were talking about with that backfire effect and that reactance is, in fact, on vaccinations. And some of the research that has come out says, hey, the more you provide education to parents that are scary and that are wary of vaccinations, the more that they say, no, I know what's best and I'm protecting my child. And so it's been a really interesting challenge for scientists, medical providers, for epidemiologists, and for social scientists to say, well, what does work? What gets around those cognitive biases? So maybe I hope in the future you look at how science addresses those cognitive biases and how we get around them.
Fantastic.
I wish I knew, but I will research it.
So if you have a science question that you would like answered on Ask an Atheist, you can go to our website and, again, submit a question. And Dan, our Moment of Science guy, will get right on it for you. He definitely takes requests. And so I would be remiss if I didn't. This is probably the best story on the list. British psychic Sally Morgan has fired her husband and son-in-law after a video surfaced of them verbally abusing and threatening a skeptic outside one of her shows. Mark Tilbrook was handing out flyers to people attending a Psychic Sally show, telling them to keep an open mind and be aware of the tricks that alleged psychics use when he was physically and verbally accosted by Morgan's husband and manager, John. John Morgan also used homophobic slurs. Psychic Sally released a statement that she was utterly ashamed and devastated at the behavior of her husband, John, and son-in-law, Darren, and assured the public that neither of them will have anything to do with their further work.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge that she said, I'm firing them. They're going to have nothing to do with my entertainment.
She should have known it was coming.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It is so many questions of this one. So many things to unpack. For example, still your husband, still your son-in-law. Aren't you kind of inextricably linked to that sort of behavior now? Shouldn't this actually, this apology kind of come from them too?
I think it would be really excellent if it would come from them too, but it does send a strong message saying, hey, you know what? I'm firing them. They're done. I do wonder, even if you do hire another manager who is not your family members, I mean, who maybe is not those family members, I would imagine that those family members would still be intricately involved in whatever kind of entertainment venues and events you're going to be, working in.
Right.
Do you hear me using the word entertainment?
Yeah, I do hear you using the word entertainment.
Entertainment is one of the ways that psychics generally get around these indemnify themselves against claims of fraud and things like that. Because they say, oh, yes, I'm a psychic and I can see the future and I'm a clairvoyant and I perceive all these things. But then whenever they're called on it, they just say, this is merely for entertainment.
Right.
I like this Mark Tilbrook guy who is handing out flyers saying, hey, are you aware of this? Don't be fooled by this.
I've always had this dream of packing the house. Like when Sylvia Brown goes to Emerald Queen over there, just down the street, of just getting as many skeptics in there as possible and just sort of handing, Sylvia Brown, I don't think is around anymore, and just handing the psychic a cold deck just to see what happens. But nobody wants to give her money. And I think sometimes isn't that, in that case, especially if you could get it on tape, isn't that a tactical win? That she gets money because you were there, but she loses money because you handed her a cold deck, and here's what it looks like when you don't
have pliant audience members.
Yeah.
And selective editing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be, I don't know, what's your take on that, Dan?
You know what? I think I was one of the people that you asked about this in the past, mm-hmm. and my opinion has changed. I'm convinced. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, convincing people it's a good idea is one thing, and then actually getting it done. I mean, that casino seats, what, like 2,000 people?
I also don't know that we'll be seeing any of Psychic Sally on this side of the pond. We've got an entire ocean and a continent between us and Psychic Sally.
But there's always, there's always somebody trying to get people out of, scare people out of their money, or psychic people out of their money, bend spoons money out of them, things like that. So I imagine at some point we're going to see another roving psychic you know, just down, you know, down here in Tacoma. But
I would love to see what the flyers were warning people about. You know, I would imagine it might be, hey, these are what cold reading techniques are. Hey, don't, you know, believe everything you see. Maybe even someone, a skeptic practicing a cold reading technique outside on someone saying, yes, I think there's someone close to you whose name starts with M. Mm. Really? Well, my mother's name is Maria. Oh, it must be my yes, Maria, and she's of the third age. Well, clearly, because you're talking to someone between, you know, the ages of 30 and 50, so their mother is going to be a retiree,
right?
You know, it would be nice to sort
isn't that from Babylon 5, third age?
Third age. Actually, I'm sort of back translating from my other language of Spanish, which is the way of saying senior citizen, and it is used in certain circles. But yes, the third age would be your senior era of your life.
I like that, but it, like I said, it reminds me of Babylon 5 a little bit.
It's a gentle way of saying old people.
So we have one more story. A magistrate in North Carolina refused to marry a gay couple last week, claiming that it was against his religious beliefs. North Carolina's ban on same-sex marriage was declared unconstitutional by a federal court. A clerk at the county superior court made it clear that magistrates were not allowed to refuse to marry gay people and would risk their jobs doing so. William Locklear, one half of the couple trying to get married, said, "He is not there to preach to us. The couple was married by a different magistrate." So they weren't refused marriage in this case. They just had to be married by somebody else.
I'm sure glad that William is now married and he got to marry his husband, that there was another magistrate that decided to do his legal job.
That's the thing, is if you're going to take a government job, that makes you a representative of the government, which cannot discriminate based on creed or, you know, a lot of things that are in these bills. That includes marriage equality, especially when marriage equality is a thing in your state. You are legally, you're kind of legally required to provide that service as long as they meet the qualifications, and these people do.
I am happy that they were able to find another magistrate or be assigned another magistrate to perform the wedding, but it really is unfortunate that the shadow was cast across, you know, what should be one of the happiest days of their lives.
Absolutely. I just, what is the thing to do here? I think, you know, if you have legal requirements that prevent you from doing things as a representative of the government, don't be a representative of the government. That's just, get out of that line of work. Go away so that people who are less bigoted can take your job.
And that's including if the requirements of the government change. I mean, I'm a public school teacher during, you know, Monday through Friday, and if suddenly the public school education system required that I do something that I was morally opposed to, you know, and it was a decided thing, it was, you know, legislated or ruled, there was case law, I would say maybe this profession isn't for me anymore.
Right. So, there's sort of a personal thing here. I mean, you're an ESL teacher, or one of the things you do is teach ESL, but we used to live in Arizona where they, by law, did away with ESL.
Yeah, so what? To English language learners, there was a voter-based initiative that said that there would be no more sheltered content, you know, classes for English language learners after their first year of being in the American school system, and they would just be, you know, transitioned into, you know, full integrated into classes. And it was something that didn't align with best practice research, to the best of my knowledge. California, Massachusetts, a few other states have done this. And
wait, Massachusetts did away with it as well?
Massachusetts had done this in about I think 19 or 2002, something like that. And so I made the conscious decision to say, you know what, I don't want to grow my career in this state. There were a few other reasons specifically related to my career that I felt that Arizona wasn't the best place for me. So I did. I, you know, that's why I came up here to go to grad school. That's why I work here. We do have integrated ELL classes here with companion teachers. It's a little bit different. Nothing's perfect. But that's an example of saying, look, I'm not going to, you know, buy into this particular thing. And if it was something that was legally ruled on and I couldn't change, you know, as one person, I would say this isn't the job for me because I cannot legally fulfill the requirements of this job per my own moral, you know, and educational philosophy.
Yeah, and I suppose this also brings up the specter of people who are pharmacists who won't fulfill, you know, things like birth control because of religious beliefs. And they're technically not government workers, but it's, you know, preventing access to healthcare and stuff like that is totally another concern.
If you sign up to do a job, do the job. Your personal feelings should not affect your ability to do the job, and if they do, get a different job.
Yeah, I mean, there's beliefs, and then there's professionalism, and, you know, if your religion gets in the way, wrong job, I guess.
Yeah, it's like something that we kind of said around the university is you can be religious and you can be a scientist, just not at the same time. When you're in the lab, apply scientific method. When you're not in the lab, do whatever you want.
Oh, I'm blanking on the guy's name, but in the Kitzmiller trial, I believe it was one of the evolutionary scientists is a Catholic, and he's like, yeah, when I'm a Catholic, I'm a Catholic, but when I'm in the laboratory, this is how it goes down. Compared to Michael Behe, who I can remember because he's got a book. I got one of his books right over there.
Oh yeah,
it's a very different thing. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this week. I'd like to thank Dan Lombardo and Becky Friedman. I would like my production assistant was Rebecca Witzman. My writing was done by Dave Roulette and Becky Friedman. Music, as usual, was done by Chris Coleman, Phil Whitfield, and Steve Siemens. My name is Sam Mulvey. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.